Hello, this is Charles Johnston. This is now the 11th in a set of podcasts adapted from a series of articles I did recently for the World Future Society. Together, these podcasts introduce the concept of cultural maturity and its implications for understanding the times we live in and the challenges ahead for us as a species. I've titled this 11th podcast in the series, A Comparative Look at Scenarios for the Future, Further Evidence for Cultural Maturity's Necessary and Now Possible New Chapter in Our Human Story. In my most recent book, Cultural Maturity, A Guidebook for the Future, I divide the commonly encountered views of the future into five scenarios, to use the language of futurists. This includes we've arrived scenarios, we've gone astray scenarios, post-industrial information age scenarios, postmodern constructivist scenarios, and transformational new paradigm scenarios. I think of these scenarios not so much as logically arrived at conclusions than as reflections of different psychological social orientations. They are predicted products of the cognitive leanings a person brings to looking toward the future. You might see the creative systems personality typology link. Combined with the degree a person can get their mind around today's new complexities and uncertainties. You might see the links both to integrative meta-perspective and the concept of capacitance. Here I address each of them to help further clarify what cultural maturity is and is not. The first two scenarios share that they assume that today's reality represents a kind of endpoint for good or for ill. Because their conclusions are similar, I will touch on them only briefly. The remaining three more explicitly make proposals about the future. I think of them each holding a useful piece of the truth, but each is also vulnerable to interpretations that make its conclusions not just unhelpful, but misleading and sometimes decidedly dangerous. With these later three scenarios, I will start with a brief snapshot summary and then provide a more extended compare and contrast description. First off, we've arrived scenarios. Many people today regard our present as a kind of cultural endpoint, as most people through history have done with regard to their particular presence. Advocates of such we've arrived conclusions assume that our current institutions and ways of thinking, whether political, religious, scientific, or economic, represent an apex, or at most need a further bit of polishing. We've arrived scenarios, prescription for the future, keep doing what we're doing, and see if we can get others to follow our example. While the concept of cultural maturity strongly affirms the achievements of the modern age, it also argues that there is no more reason to assume we've arrived at some culminating truth in our age than any age previous, and every reason to hope that we have not. It regards neither modern institutional structures nor modern social values and aesthetics as last chapters. It argues that carrying modern Western culture's great successes unmodified into the future, in particularly its onward and upward conception of progress and its extreme materialist individualist values, but also its specific institutional structures, would in fact have most unfortunate consequences. It also counsels against assuming that modern Western cultural forms represent ideals to which people everywhere, irrespective of their cultural context, should ascribe. Second, we've gone astray scenarios. Certain other people believe almost the opposite, that in some significant way humanity has failed. Often the implication is not just that we have made mistakes in judgment or policy, that we have erred fundamentally. we've gone astray. Scenarios take their most radical form in the predictions of impending Armageddon put forward by certain extreme religious views. But we also encounter less extreme we've gone astray interpretations, such as those we see with the more pessimistic of environmentalist positions, with conservative reactions to the modern erosion of traditional values, with philosophically romantic and idealist beliefs, and more often than we might immediately recognize with common liberal humanistic beliefs. These further examples, while less obviously negative, often translate into an it's all going to hell in a handbasket cynicism that can be as severe in its criticism and often just as limiting when it comes to useful action. We've gone astray. Scenarios produce different advice depending on who is offering it. For some, the task is simply to fix what we've broken. For many, the answer lies in going back to the values and assumptions of some earlier time. For others, as with we've arrived adherence, it means that there is really nothing to do. In this case, because the damage has already been done. We've gone so far astray that we are beyond redemption. Culturally mature understanding views we've gone astray scenarios as inappropriately condemning and, in the end, diversions from the true magnitude of what the future asks of us. The concept of cultural maturity affirms that modern times often find us in denial about much that desperately needs attention, and it agrees that we have made plenty of mistakes. But it also suggests that most of the dilemmas we confront are the result not of our failings, but of our successes. Culturally mature perspective also cautions that earlier cultural realities have been no more pure or ideal than those of present times, and makes clear that going back is not an answer. This even if we wish to retrieve things we appropriately perceive to be lost. The concept of cultural maturity affirms the claim that important truths, for example, about nature, about sacred, about community, and more, have been forgotten. But at the same time, it supports the conclusion that the natural trajectory of cultural systems, like that of individuals, is growth, and that that is what we have seen. Cultural mature perspective also warns that we've gone astray conclusions easily become self-fulfilling prophecies. We see this most readily with extreme views that make endgame scenarios inevitable expressions of God's will. But we encounter something just as debilitating and self-fulfilling with liberal cynicism. The cynic gets to feel right and superior while taking no real action that might make things different. And number three, post-industrial information age scenarios. A third common view of the future assumes that inventions yet to come hold the answer to humanity's problems and pictures a future defined by continued onward and upward technological progress. A snapshot comparison. Cultural maturity affirms the role of technological progress, but it emphasizes that inventing is not the same thing as using invention wisely. It also emphasizes that technological advancement, unless accompanied by deep changes in ourselves, cannot get us where we need to go. The best of post-industrial information age views include the recognition that new technologies tend to bring with them new ways of thinking. But technological advancement alone cannot fully explain the changes we see today or produce the changes we need for tomorrow. A technological gospel, even if we include the changes in thought that new invention helps stimulate, ultimately stops short of a narrative able to provide reliable guidance or real inspiration. Some extended reflections. Post-industrial information age interpretations treat invention as the fundamental driver of cultural change and emphasize the transforming effects that inventions of the future will have in every aspect of our lives. Often they make technology the ultimate solution. Such views are common in popular culture and academic thought and find special favor in futurist circles. The digital revolution has given such beliefs a new generation of adherents. Culturally mature perspective affirms technology's essential role in future possibilities and also applauds many post-industrial information age ideas. But at the same time, it directly challenges much in at least the more simplistic of post-industrial information age interpretation. Most obviously, it does so in cautioning against the assumption that the consequences of invention will necessarily be positive. It reminds us that inventing is not the same thing as using inventions wisely. It also emphasizes that technological solutions will rarely in themselves be sufficient for addressing the tasks ahead. The most limited of post-industrial information age thinking simply extends the industrial age's onward and upward story, and this contributes little to the needed greater maturity of perspective. But post-industrial information age thinking can also alert us to many of the questions culturally mature perspective addresses. It is also the case that the best of post-industrial information age thought can put forward ideas that are nearly as far-reaching in their implications as those offered by more explicitly culturally mature writings. For example, Alvin Toffler and John Nesbitt, who provided some of the best early futures-oriented thinking for a popular audience, addressed broad cultural concerns. And some of the more insightful commentators on the information revolution, Nicholas Negroponte and Bill Joy come immediately to mind, have reflected on specific social issues. We see this result for two very different reasons. First, there is the fact that emerging technologies often serve to support and catalyze cultural maturity-related changes. The fact that global access to technologies can make possible greater resource efficiency, for example, would be critical to long-term environmental sustainability. And emerging technologies can support not just needed changes in what we do, but also in how we think. We see this with how decentralized information technologies can thrust us into systemically networked realities that just by their structures transcend conventional expertise and authority. The second reason we may see related predictions is a product of unwarranted conclusions. Post-industrial information age thinkers can predict outcomes that, while superficially accurate, are not really supported by post-industrial information age interpretation. Post-industrial information age thinkers can assume, for example, that the greater connectedness that comes with globalization will by itself produce a more peaceful world. Culturally mature perspective warns us that if the result is not instead to be even more dangerous conflict, changes in the ways we think and relate will also be required. We find further example in theorists who observe some of the more positive possible effects of decentralized information technologies and then talk as if the psychological and social changes needed for a healthy future will follow naturally from them. This prediction is again not supported, certainly if we are talking about the depth of psychological and social changes required for wise future decision making. Indeed, a common result of new information technologies is to compound one of our time's greatest problems, growing addiction to artificial stimulation and pseudo-significance. At the least, technological advances by themselves do nothing to counter it. Culturally mature perspective applauds contributions made by the more sophisticated of post-industrial information age thinkers. At the same time, it warns even those who make an effort to think in more encompassing ways that they may need to re-examine their explanations if their ideas are to hold up, and more important, if their ideas are to ultimately serve us as we go forward. post-industrial information age interpretation and the concept of cultural maturity more explicitly part company regarding the common post-industrial information age assumption that technological innovation is what ultimately drives cultural change. Culturally mature perspective affirms the importance of technology as one driver of change, but it also emphasizes that this explanation in isolation leaves out much of what is most significant for understanding change and, more important, for usefully addressing the future. It argues that, more accurately, the causality goes both ways. Invention catalyzes change, but what we are capable of inventing is also always a function of who we are and how we are able to understand and perceive. In particular, innovation reflects our time and culture story. An illustration: while China had all the technical prerequisites for an industrial revolution 2,000 years ago, it lacked the materialist, individualist values needed to make such change acceptable and successful. Today, we see no such lack. With regard to today's needed changes, invention helps drive and support cultural maturity. But it's just as true that invention sufficiently innovative to push us toward needed changes could not happen and certainly would not be supported without the new sensibilities and perspectives that cultural maturity begins to make possible. Another way in which culturally mature perspective takes issue with post-industrial information age assumptions concerns just what needed changes in how we understand, if recognized, entail. The best of post-industrial information age thinking affirms the importance not just of technical advancement, but also of new ways of thinking, and there can be similarities in the kinds of conceptual changes proposed. We often see emphasis, for example, on the importance of systemic understanding. But here, again, limited assumptions about how things work, in this case a strong mechanistic bias, tend to get in the way of the needed sophistication of conceptual perspective. What we encounter is rarely more than systemic understanding of the engineering sort. Culturally mature perspective emphasizes the importance of systems thinking that reflects the fact that we are living beings. We can miss the strong ideological component that commonly permeates post-industrial information age thinking for the simple reason that such thinking emphasizes much that we most mythologize in our time. Post-industrial information age assertions can simply appear smart and logical. The hidden ideological thread becomes most apparent when such interpretation takes a utopian turn. Think of science fiction-like prognostications from the middle of the previous century that claim that we should all by now be living in glass-enclosed cities and flying around in personal transporters. We encounter this ideological component in knee-jerk conclusions that with any close examination become questionable at best. Consider the common assumption in artificial intelligence circles that computers will soon become more intelligent than we are. In a purely computational sense, they are already more intelligent, indeed much more so. But belief that they will become more intelligent than we are in the ways that are most important to us, that can guide us in having meaningful relationships and crafting creative and purposeful lives, reflects decidedly limited and ultimately ideological ideas about the nature of intelligence. This distinction becomes particularly critical if our concern is the wisdom-related cognitive capacities that will be increasingly important to us in the future. We encounter a related kind of ideological belief with supposedly scientific conclusions that reduce to a narrow scientism. Such conclusions and techno-utopian thinking have the same origin, extension of the modern age belief that it is all a great clockworks to an absurd, idealized extreme. Neuroscientism is remarkable as much for what its thinking leaves out as what it emphasizes. I think of evolutionary biologist Steven Pinker's ludicrous conclusion that music has no real evolutionary significance, that in the end music is just ear candy. It is remarkable enough that anyone who has ever listened to music could reach this conclusion, but it is particularly remarkable that this conclusion could be reached by an evolutionary biologist, given that music has had an essential role in every human society we are aware of since our species beginnings. A related absolutist dismissing of the spiritual is common with such thinking. Richard Dawkins, the most familiar exponent of such scientifically based atheism. Creative systems theory provides explanation for these absurd conclusions. It describes how the more non-computational parts of intelligence that music and the spiritual each draw on reflect what it calls more archetypally feminine or left-hand aspects of our systemic makeup. It goes on to describe how the contribution of archetypally feminine sensibilities have evolved through history, having greatest influence in earliest cultural times, then gradually diminishing in influence over civilization's course, and today often coming to be nearly invisible. Any at all complete systemic formulation requires thinking that takes into account the contributions of both left-hand and right-hand cognitive aspects. The fact that techno-utopian belief is based on an absolutist polar identification means that it represents not just ideology, but ideology of a particularly fundamentalist sort. And the fact that it reflects polar identification with archetypally masculine right-hand sensibility means that such ideology, because we are vulnerable to confusing it with the kind of new clarity the future is requiring us, can be especially dangerous. The pivotal influence of digital technologies today can combine with transitional dynamics, see the link to the dilemma of trajectory, to produce particularly extreme forms of techno-utopianism. We see this most dramatically with anything is possible special effects imagery in the media, but we also encounter it in views expressed by acknowledged serious thinkers. I'm reminded of recent claims by techno-utopian guru Ray Kurzweil that artificial intelligence, by offering the option of wholly disembodied existence, will make eternal life finally possible. Besides being a conclusion that again depends on a naively simplistic picture of intelligence, this conclusion reflects an ultimate limits-denying ambition that is a giveaway for ideology. Extreme expressions of a technological gospel can titillate, but they are best thought of as what creative systems theory calls transitional absurdity. Post-industrial information age interpretations, well, sometimes helpful, most often stop well short of providing the completeness of perspective our times demand. Indeed, because such interpretations tend to leave out so much that needs to be considered as we go forward, not just how personal change must be, but also how deeply in ourselves it will require that we reach, they often work to hide us from the depths of what our times require. They may provide imagery that excites, but they fail to give us an at all complete picture of what the future will require. Technological advancement is wonderful, but it is only one part of what we need for a future that is worth living. Fourth, postmodern constructivist scenarios. Postmodern thought has had major influence in recent decades, particularly in academia. It emphasizes our time's loss of familiar cultural guideposts, and final, essentialist truth in general. A snapshot comparison. Advocates of postmodern perspective argue that we construct the realities we live in. They see the defining task of the future as doing so more consciously. Cultural maturity views postmodern thought as providing a useful first step, but it proposes that surrendering our past cultural absolutes can only be a beginning. We must also learn how to relate and think in new, post-essentialist, more nuanced, dynamic, and systemic ways. particularly with the more extreme of interpretations postmodern thought commonly reduces to an ultimately unhelpful different strokes for different folks relativism. Its common aversion to overarching conception, indeed conception of most any kind, means it leaves us with little of use to replace the traditional guideposts it so insightfully observes are being taken away. Some more extended reflections. The best of formal postmodern thought at least approaches cultural maturity's threshold, but postmodern ideas vary greatly in their success at stepping over it or even usefully recognizing its implications. Postmodern constructivist perspective today gives us at once some of the best and some of the weakest of future-related thought. Postmodern belief had its start in the philosophical ponderings of existentialism. With the growing influence of social constructivism in the latter part of the 20th century, it came to be a central influence in academic circles. Today, postmodern sensibility has come to define much of popular culture, helping take us beyond the heroic romantic narrative that until recently defined the larger portion of shared cultural expression. You might see the link to the evolution of narrative. But while on both fronts, more formal thought and popular expression, postmodern perspective makes an important contribution. In each case, it stops ultimately short of where we need to go. Formal postmodern constructivist ideas share with the concept of cultural maturity the question of the absoluteness of past ways of understanding. They emphasize our time's loss of final truths, and they point out accurately that beliefs vary widely between cultures, evolve over time, and are subject to human manipulation. But postmodern constructivist ideas fail to help us understand at all deeply why today we see such fundamental questioning of past belief. And of particular importance, rarely do they offer much of real substance to replace the more reliable, if limited, beliefs of times past. Some formal postmodern constructivist thought does make a start at the needed greater sophistication of understanding. The claim that we construct the realities we live in at least implies the possibility of crafting our world in more effective ways. Postmodern constructivist thinkers also often make predictions that are at least generally consistent with more systemically conceived options. For example, how institutions and assumptions of the modern age will give way to more fluid and pluralistic cultural structures, and how understanding in the future will be more and more often characterized by multiple perspectives and often by contradiction. But fears of falling back into old absolutes severely limit postmodern constructivist thinking. Even the most fully developed ideas stop short of the critical next step. They fail to help us construct our personal and collective realities in the needed more dynamic and complex ways. Indeed, postmodern constructivist beliefs often directly interfere with efforts to go further. Postmodern constructivist thinkers tend to assume that there are no universal truths, only truths specific to particular times and places. Formal postmodern constructivist thinking can get stuck in an immediate skepticism toward anything that might look like an overarching concept. This skepticism has admirable roots. Overarching ideas in times past have had their origins in narrow and often self-serving belief. But postmodern thought's common distaste for big-picture conception, indeed conception of any substantive sort, undercuts its ability to contribute creatively to the larger conversation. Postmodern theorists tend to be better at critique than they are at providing useful perspective, and often theirs is the most limited, indeed limiting and deadening kind of critique. Identification with our own ultimate inability to know for sure and with different strokes for different folks' notions of diversity ultimately undermine efforts to effectively move forward. There are thinkers of postmodern constructivist bent whose contributions I draw on and whom I very much respect. For example, Richard Rorty in the philosophical sphere and the many important contributors to constructivist perspective in education. But postmodern constructivist views, even at their best, can provide but a start toward understanding either the present or the future. Over the last couple of decades, postmodern constructivist sensibility has come simultaneously to have less of a hold in academic circles and a growing influence in spheres of popular expression. With contemporary art, music, humor, and popular culture more generally, we see increased use of irony and a mixing of influences from often far-flung sources. As with the earlier, more formal postmodern contribution, this popular influence has at once invited the beginnings of more complex and multifaceted sensibility and resulted in efforts that often contribute much less than they claim. Too often today we find popular expression that confuses the glib, ironic, and often simply random with substance. At worst, we get expression that is little more than artificial stimulation in the name of significance. This postmodern influence increasingly permeates not just entertainment, but also more serious forms of popular expression. For example, it has had growing influence in the offerings of public media. I think of Ira Glass's This American Life on National Public Radio as first introducing postmodern irony and contradiction of the public media world. Today, such sensibilities permeate more and more of public media programming, particularly that which attempts to reach a younger demographic. While initially this aesthetic was new and made a contribution, all too often today it translates into a glib difference for its own sake cleverness that says very little while pretending to be profound. Postmodern sensibility has become amplified with the increasing prominence of digital media. Digital media's ability to create links between massive amounts of information and between people through personal data plays right into postmodern sensibility's inability to distinguish random associations and undifferentiated stimulation with significance. We find this with entertainment media on the web, and again, we find it too with content that claims to be more serious. I find the paucity of meaningful news coverage on the web quite disturbing, and the fact that we don't seem to recognize that paucity even more so. Too often what claims to be news, in fact, fails to rise much above the level of an afternoon soap opera. Because sites that aggregate news from multiple sources commonly base selection only on what people are paying attention to, they end up combining significance randomly with the worst of triviality. Mideast policy and Kim Kardashian's behind get equal billing. And the content at the most superficial of sites is little more than clickbait masquerading as meaning. Today, we encounter an extreme manifestation of this trend with the proliferation of outright fake news. We see a related confusion of substance and superficial substitutes with social media. For example, while the larger portion of social media claims to be about connectedness, instead, it too often leaves us estranged in a world of largely random and mostly self-centered associations. I've written about how one of the deepest hungers people feel in our time is for a sense of connectedness and community. I often do an exercise with groups where I ask people where in their lives they feel most rich and most impoverished. As far as the experience of being impoverished, a lack of a deep sense of community wins hands down. There are instances in which social media provides important benefits and real human connectedness. But social media have also contributed to a world in which we more and more confuse the most trivial of human contact with real relationship. If postmodern sensibilities did not so define meaning in our time, we would find this situation quite ludicrous. Put in developmental language, The postmodern constructivist contribution, whether of a more formal or more popular sort, reflects well the unsettling realities of cultural development's transition stage. When timely, it helps us get beyond the past's heroic romantic assumptions, challenges ideology, and confronts worlds that may seem only contradictory from the perspective of what we have known. But in the end, postmodern constructivist beliefs fail to grasp at all clearly what, if anything, may lie beyond transition's threshold. When this failure is extreme, we find sensibility that becomes, in effect, transitional absurdity. And finally, we have transformational new paradigm scenarios. This last viewpoint similarly talks about changing cultural realities, but frames these changes in the language of changes in consciousness or new spiritual and scientific paradigm. A snapshot comparison. Cultural maturity agrees that our times require that we think and perceive in new ways. But there is a critical distinction between cultural maturity's particular developmental interpretation of how changes are to take place and more transformational views. Cultural maturity proposes that the greater portion of such views, particularly of the more conceptually idealist, philosophically romantic, or New Age sort, have more to do with wishful thinking than changes possible in our time. Most pointedly, it argues that often as not, such utopian pictures of change, even if they were possible to realize, imply realities and consequences that we would not want. It goes on to propose that the most simplistic of these views do not really describe anything new at all, but instead reflect idealized projections from the realities of times past. Some more extended reflections. We most commonly associate religion and spirituality with we've arrived conclusions. Religion tends to regard its views as absolute, understanding's last word. We also find religious belief translated into we've got astray conclusions. At their Armageddon scenario extreme, conservative religious views can give us some of the most dramatic, less than hopeful interpretations. But we also encounter spiritual religious ways of thinking that specifically focus on the future and that are ultimately positive in what they predict. Being that some can be confused with cultural maturity's viewpoint, it is important to be clear about fundamental differences. Transformational new paradigm interpretations include both efforts that make a serious and concerted attempt to understand cultural change and a wide array of highly simplistic and ultimately unhelpful popular views. Transformational new paradigm ideas at their best encourage us to think radically about what the future will require of us. At their worst, they present intractably ideological conclusions that are not in the end new at all. Transformational new paradigm thinking can share important characteristics with culturally mature perspective. This fact both alerts us to where contributions may lie, and because we find such similarities with both the best and the worst of such thinking, emphasizes the importance of taking particular care in teasing apart specifics. Like the concept of cultural maturity, transformational new paradigm thinking highlights the need for change that makes a fundamental leap. It also most often argues that needed changes are as much about ourselves as how we and how we think as they are about what we might do or invent. And almost always, too, it acknowledged the importance of seeing interconnections that before we have ignored, and better including more archetypally feminine left-hand values and sensibilities along with those of a more right-hand sort. Transformational new paradigm thinkers have sometimes brought these recognitions together in ways that at least knock on cultural maturity's door. Transformational new paradigm perspective at its best is represented by historically significant contributors to big picture understanding. I think immediately of Carl Jung, Gene Gebser, Eric Neumann, and Joseph Campbell. More recently, leadership theorists with transformational new paradigm inclinations, such as Margaret Wheatley or Peter Senge, have also made contributions. At the same time, transformational new paradigm ideas, certainly those commonly found in popular New Age sorts of views, frequently have nothing at all to do with cultural maturity. Commonly, they really have nothing to do with the future. More accurately, they represent modern explication of timeless, romantic, mystical, or philosophically idealist beliefs. A quick look at how philosophical idealism works helps clarify the distinction. Philosophical idealism views history as progressing toward some social or spiritual ideal. With simplistic transformational new paradigm thought, the ideal is specifically spiritual. We find a good example of philosophical idealism of the more spiritual sort in the early 20th century thinking of French philosopher and Jesuit priest Teilhard de Chardin, who postulated that history would end at a spiritual enlightenment-like omega point. Both left-hand and right-hand sensibilities are acknowledged with philosophical idealism, but the left-hand essence or spirit is seen as the ultimately determining force, driving and shaping the right-hand world of manifest form. In the end, more left-hand spiritual sensibilities win duality's two-handed battle. With unfortunate frequency, transformational new paradigm ideas reflect polarized identification with the archetypally feminine and miss that the truth claims that result get us no closer to culturally mature perspective than do ideological beliefs of a solely mechanistic right-hand sort. Even transformational new paradigm views that succeed at being helpful are commonly limited by their strong left-hand biases. They may ask important questions and in do so take us up to cultural maturity threshold, but their picture of the future most often then collapses into belief that makes the spiritual primary. We can miss the left-hand bias with certain transformational new paradigm writers because they make science their primary focus. But in the hands of these writers, science ends up reduced to interpretation that makes interconnectedness, if not what it is all about, certainly primary. Notions like entanglement and the participatory role of the observer in physics are often simplistically interpreted in this way. Transformational new paradigm scientific interpretations also often give particular attention to paranormal phenomena. Transformational new paradigm interpretations of science can be as limited and ultimately unhelpful as the narrowest kind of scientism, just limited and unhelpful in an opposite way. Sometimes we find good and interesting science, but as often a left-handed agenda means that data must be taken with a considerable grain of salt. We find a similar kind of simplistic interpretation with some of the more popular of systems writings. The recognition of systemic wholeness becomes an elaborate way of arguing for ultimate unity. Transformational new paradigm ideas often find significant overlap with we've gone astray interpretations, more so than transformational new paradigm supporters with their commonly upbeat identification with things inspirational wish to admit. People of more romantic or philosophically idealist inclination can fall into either camp or vacillate back and forth. When people who make more left-hand sensibilities primarily look to the future, they are often drawn to images of collapse and resurrection. People who ascribe to transformational new paradigm views can be some of the quickest to see the future in cataclysmic terms, whether physical cataclysm, such as environmental collapse, or fundamental failure of past world views. I remember being surprised at a conference I attended in the late 1990s on the Y2K millennium computer bug to find that the people who seemed most sure that the Y2K bug could have devastating consequences were not the information age computer types, but rather those of a more transformational bent. Sometimes transformational new paradigm views interpret history in ways that are at least superficially similar to creative systems theory's developmental evolutionary interpretation. The best of such thinking can be notable for giving a depth of attention to early cultural stages that is often lacking with more academic pictures of history. Creative systems theory describes how an appreciation for archetypally feminine sensibilities is necessary for a deep understanding of history's early stages. But even here, the left-hand bias of such views means that romantic projection is commonly confused with accurate description. Differences with creative systems theory become more clear when we turn to making sense of our times and the challenges ahead. We tend then to find descriptions that have more to do with utopian wishful thinking than anything really possible. What gets put forward as radical in its implications is instead all too familiar idealized projection, some hoped-for golden age. The result tends to be a picture of the future that even if it were realizable, we would not want. The conclusion that we would not want this kind of outcome should be obvious from observations about the new kinds of skills and capacities the future will require. Such views fail to help us adequately understand either needed new ways of acting and relating or the depth and nuance of thought that will be increasingly necessary. But we find an especially concrete sort of support for this conclusion in a characteristic we commonly find with even the most well-meant of transformational new paradigm belief. Like ideology more generally, it tends to attract people with specific personality styles. Drawing distinction between culturally mature perspective and a version of transformational new paradigm perspective that has found particular popularity in recent decades, what is commonly referred to as integral thought, highlights this result. Ken Wilber is the most recognized exponent of such thinking. The term integral might seem to suggest conclusions similar to what we see with cultural maturity. But while people who identify with such perspective often sincerely attempt to address the future and understand in more encompassing ways, such thinking most often reduces to a spiritual form of philosophical idealism. At best, the result is ideas with a strong left-hand bias. At worst, we find all too familiar New Age ideology just dressed in fancier clothing. We also find that such views predictably attract particular kinds of people, people who have personality styles in which specific, more left-leaning sensibilities ultimately prevail. The greater portion of transformational new paradigm thinking misses the mark not just because it reduces ultimately to left-hand interpretation, but also because it, in making the native sensibilities of certain temperaments more enlightened, it is ultimately self-serving in the chosen people ideological sense. With regard to the future, we do not benefit from further chosen people worldviews, even if they are put forward with the best of intentions. Most advocates of transformational new paradigm views that stop short are appropriately thought of as fringe figures, but some too have a wide audience. As with the more narrowly conceived of post-industrial information age and postmodern constructivist interpretations, it is essential that we recognize what is missing if our thinking is to effectively take us forward. In summary, cultural maturity's viewpoint differs from each of these predictive pictures in specific and critical ways. It also provides an encompassing vantage capable of putting differences in perspective. It sees the above alternatives as the conclusions we would predict when the world is observed through particular lenses. Cultural maturity's larger perspective both avoids traps common to these various alternative views and provides ways to address essential questions that none of them alone or even together can get at.